This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town. Your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
It's a term we hear all the time now, that a school has gone into lockdown. From a small primary school in Pupunca to two schools in Berwick yesterday.
Two schools in Berwick, they went into lockdown this morning.
That Brentwood Park Primary School was then put into lockdown after that incident. Neighbouring school, Cambria College, was also put into lockdown.
We never went into lockdown at school. We never had lockdown training at school. We had fire drills, but now they are commonplace. So how do they work? Are kids told to hide? Are doors locked? Are blinds pulled down? And what are they told about why they're going into lockdown or why they're practicing lockdown? Does it scare some kids? And are there standard guidelines that schools have to follow? It actually feels a little bit American. So is it sensible? Is it needed? Or does it just create stress? Has your school gone into lockdown? Does your school practice lockdown drills? And how do you feel about it? And it's Friday, so as always, Jacinta Parsons will be joining me just after 11:30. We're going to talk about a couple of things. One, maybe, that we shouldn't be talking about, but we're going to go there anyhow. It may or may not involve Robert Irwin. And we're also going to talk about the rise of the so-called fridge cigarette. The fridge cigarette sounds like this. And we'll explain more a little later. The fridge cigarette. Our number's 1300 222 774.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Has your school gone into lockdown? Does it practice lockdown drills? What do your kids tell you when they come home? How do they feel about it? Are they scared? And is there a standard procedure that schools have to follow when they go into lockdown? And is it different for primary schools and senior schools? Like, I could imagine that you would tell a 16, 17-year-old more than what you would tell a 6 or a 7-year-old. We never had lockdown drills at school. Maybe we should have. We had fire drills. So how do you feel about lockdown? Melissa's in Kilsyth. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, how are you?
Really well. How commonplace are they now to practice? I've heard anecdotally around the office that some kids practice them as often as once a month.
My school we're at, we do them probably once a year because we're required by law, I think, to do bushfire drills a couple of times a year or general fire drills. I think once a year for the last couple of years.
And are you a parent or a teacher, Melissa?
I'm actually a teacher.
And so are you giving guidance on what a lockdown drill looks like what you should say,
yeah,
how you should manage it?
Yeah, very much so. We're given all the details about how the alarm is sort of given and what the students need to do in terms of where they need to be in the classroom and sort of calmness that we just keep about it, and things like that, just to sort of help make sure that the kids don't sort of feel panicked or anything else like that.
Do you tell them why you're practicing?
We make it clear and just say there might be a situation where someone comes on the school grounds that's not meant to be there. It could even be the situation where it's a family custody situation or something like that, which I suppose is more common these days. We're very lucky that we don't have the American ones, but I've been in the States at a friend's school when they went into lockdown. So,
it's very different, isn't it? It does feel American, though, and maybe it's just because I haven't experienced one and I have a certain image that isn't the reality. Good on you, Melissa. Thank you. Lee's in Seaford. Hi, Lee.
Hi. I'm just wondering, I grew up in the early 80s at a secondary school in Waverley, and we get called to a type of lockdown and a little robot would, come out of the admin area and kind of slowly make its way out. It was about a foot tall. And then it was supposed to be, like, if there were any bombs around, it would alert the school.
Lee, your phone's cutting in and out. So hang on, a robot would come in?
A little tiny robot that was about one foot high, and we'd like all get called out with like a lockdown into the central admin area, and it would just come out like a little, I know, super weird.
Like a little R2-D2.
Yeah, exactly, with little flashing lights. I'm really pretty sure it would never have actually done anything, and it would come out about 10 metres and turn around and go back in, and we'd all just go back into class.
Wow. I've never heard of that. That's unbelievable. A little, maybe that's what we need now. Lee, thank you. 1-300-222-774. Does your school practice lockdowns? How do your kids feel about them? Does it make them feel safer, or does it make them feel a little bit stressed? This, Rish, we had bomb threats in the 90s and we had to go onto the Oval. And another that says, what rubbish, lockdowns are not commonplace. Well, Adam Voigt is the CEO of Real Schools. Adam, would every school have a set of credentials, and would every school practice or know how to go into lockdown?
Yeah, good morning, Rochelle. And the short answer to that is yes. So every school, particularly our government schools in Victoria, has a site-specific emergency management plan, and they take the regs that come from the state government down to, okay, how does this apply to us? Most of them are asked to run an emergency drill of some kind around once a term, but that can take multiple forms. So when you've got a bush school that's going to have its biggest risk is going to be bushfires, then they might run more like your old classic fire drill, you know, once more.
Get down low and go.
Pretty much it. But the other one, that, like, even these lockdown, sometimes when we get worried about like adding up the lockdowns and how many lockdowns are happening, some of those schools will go into some kind of semi-lockdown if there's a poisonous snake spotted. Yeah, so we kind of included it in all that. And yeah, you're right, Rochelle, we get this kind of our first reaction is this American, you know, idea that this is all about school shootings and incredibly violent incidents. That's just not how it manifests in Australia. Probably the best way to think about one of the lockdown situations in Australia, it's a bit more like the safety instructions when you get on a plane. You know, we're so unlikely to have the worst possible scenario, but why not put a little bit of time into being ready?
When did we start to use the term? Two questions there. When did we start to do them? Like, when did they become common practice that every school has this procedure? And I guess why?
Yeah, I think there's been changes legislatively around like this emergency management plan, and it's become a catch-all term that has kind of expanded from the old fire drill to include these lockdown or lockout situations, but also to include other events that can happen around a school, like your caller that just rang in and talked about domestic situations. I certainly, as a principal, had a situation like that myself where we got a tip-off that there was going to be a parent come down to the school who we knew that there was a restraining order in effect in the family. And we just went, we don't think there's a danger here, but we're going to execute this now just to make sure that we can cut this off at the pass and make sure that we put the right things in place and do effectively what parents expect us to do. So it's more a language shift. We've always had these plans in place, and it's now just a bit more of a catch-all for kind of anything that can happen, not just a fire.
I wonder how different you have to be in terms of how much information you tell, how you explain it, depending on the age. So Kate sends this. She says, kindergarten teacher here. We practice lockdown and lockdown shelter in place and emergency evacuations each term. It's very anxiety provoking for little people, no matter how carefully explained. What a world we live in. If you've got a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old in kindergarten, how do you explain to them, look, we're just practicing something in case a bad person comes into the school?
Yeah, it's tricky. And it's definitely actually mentioned in the legislation that depending on the age and the developmental stage of the kids, that the teachers are going to make some adjustments. So you'd tell the secondary kids something completely different than you would tell your kindergarten kids. And it's because we don't want to trigger unnecessary anxiety in them. Queensland University of Technology actually did some research around this, and they came back to their conclusions were that we actually need to be really careful with this, because in our pursuit of making our schools hyper safe, we are are at risk of triggering an unnecessary anxiety in young people. They're not kind of equipped to be able to handle the low level of risk. And if we have them practicing barricading doors and things like that, then they start to imagine things that aren't authentically a risk for them. And the truth is that for most lockdowns and the procedures in Australia, the way that we practice it with our students, they're not quite that severe anyway. It's pretty much an adult locking the doors and asking the kids to stay away from the windows. So we try to keep the stress low because the truth is that the risk is really low.
My daughter says they practice lockdowns at the Bass Coast. An alarm means evacuate and a lockdown is either over the PA with lockdown. They hide anywhere they can. Until your segment just now, I didn't know anything about my kids practicing lockdowns. And others talking about different reasons. And I guess there's the drills of get out onto the oval and all sit around so we know where everyone is because a snake has been spotted. There's another one here from Fade that says we had lockdowns many, many years ago because we had a swarm of bees in our playground in rural Victoria. That feels very different to go inside, pull down the blinds and hide and lock the doors. That feels a little more panicky as opposed to everyone join, get on the oval so that we can do a head count and make sure that everybody's here and that no one's near the snake.
Agree. And so that's where at a local level, what we want is school principals and leadership teams making really smart decisions about that and saying, do we need to practice four times a year, kids practicing for the worst possible scenario, which is all, at an infinitesimally small risk of happening in our school, or should we practice for the one that could show up in the school? And that's the one that, tends to, you want kids prepared in a way that they're not going to be anxious and stressed and constantly looking out the window worrying if a bad man's coming along. But they're actually, also hit that nice little sweet spot where, if something were to happen in the school, we don't need to panic. The adults have got this. We know what to do. We're going to follow our teacher's instructions. We'll be right. And that's kind of where we want them to land.
Are they, and this, I guess, as my final question, Adam Voigt is with you, the CEO of Real Schools. We're talking about whether or not we are going in, schools are going into lockdown too often, if we're hearing the term too often, and whether or not they're helpful or slightly harmful and anxiety inducing, and the reasons why a school may go into lockdown. Are we at risk of overusing the term and overusing when and how we use it to the point where maybe kids don't take it seriously? So there's a text here that says, my kids had a lockdown this week because another kid had a meltdown and was flipping tables. It seems like a bit much.
Yeah, I think there is an authentic risk on that. I think that, these terms, sometimes the use of a word lockdown can be something that does trigger either that American view in us, or us poor Victorians can even have flashbacks to COVID, can't we, when we start talking about lockdowns. So there's a real negative angle on it, and what it's really about is just being prepared. And so it's good to be prepared, but what we don't want to do is be so over-prepared that we're nervous all the time, our kids are arriving at school anxious enough. A lot of them arriving with all sorts of anxieties in their backpack, all sorts of mental health challenges. And we have to be careful that we don't overdo the idea that we need to make our schools 100% safe, because we can't promise that. So let's be, commensurately safe to the risk is the thing we need to do, because you're right. Otherwise, we put everyone on edge and no one even learns particularly well around their fractions when they're constantly on edge.
The reaction to it is really varied, and I wonder if that's dependent on where you live and the experience that you've had. So this is a message from an anonymous teacher in the Broadmeadows area, and it says, we've had many lockdowns in the primary school I teach at. Students trying to attack other students with scissors, bats, sticks from the kitchen garden. A machete was brought in by a 10-year-old who hid behind the bins at recess. Yep. The people who text in and say we don't need them have no idea.
Yeah, I do agree that having something up our sleeve for the worst case scenario, particularly when we know in some places that risk is higher than in others, being prepared for that seems like a smart thing to do. What we need to do is kind of, I guess, be the adults in the room and kind of just remember that a lot of the issues that the schools are trying to deal with here are not of their creation. And even when we think about the example that's happened this week with Brentwood Park School, the lesson when you look at it from afar is probably that the lockdown worked. you know, they did it. They did the right thing. They were able to minimise the harm, and despite the fact that one child's been injured and a staff member's been hurt, and that's awful, and we need to put that support around them. That could have been a lot worse, you know. And so we do have the acute mental health issues coming into our schools. We do have violent kids showing up in our schools. We don't help them enough to cope with that. And so anything we can do to do the preventative work, but also the reactive work with the knowledge that it is going to happen from time to time, then that's work that kind of, you know, again reduces anxiety, because we all like to know we're well planned, and having this up our sleeve helps with that feeling.
Sorry, Adam, one more question.
No.
So Kate has sent this, and I find this interesting, whether or not maybe sometimes lockdowns happen within the staff quarters and the kids know nothing about them, because Kate says, I work in a secondary school. Our most recent lockdown drills have actually been in response to overly aggressive parents coming into admin and threatening staff. Sadly, sometimes the so-called bad men, in inverted commas, is one of us.
Exactly right. And so a lot of these lockdowns that happen are not like full school lockdowns where that thing happens, where you imagine, you know, like I said, barricaded doors and kids diving under tables. Yeah. Often they're isolated to one particular part of the school, and often just a handful of people are affected. And you're right. You know, the sad part is that our teachers and our principals at the moment are at sort of commensurate risk of physical injury at work as people like commercial fishermen and firefighters. And chiefly that's because of threats from parents. So if we want to do something about this, sometimes it's worth is actually just a little bit as the adults and parents moderating a little bit of what's our response when we don't get the result we're looking for from a school.
Maybe it comes down to this, which one tech said, just give it another name other than lockdown.
It might be.
We all have an image.
Quiet, and safe rest period or something like that might do the job for us all, won't it?
Adam, thank you. Good to speak with you. Have a good weekend.
You too, Rochelle.
Adam Voigt, the CEO of Real Schools. Lots of you talking about how common it is in your particular school, but yeah, maybe that text is right. Maybe it just needs another name. Well, if you're planning on getting cherries this Christmas, they might look a little different, but will they cost any more?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Christmas is just around the corner. I know it's frightening, but it is. And for many of us, it isn't Christmas until we buy that big box of cherries. However, cold weather in some of the regions that grow most of our cherries is saying that the lead up might cause some issues. Jane McNaughton, rural reporter based in Ballarat. Jane, every year we kind of look forward to the cherries, the box of cherries, and buying them. There's a ritual and a love behind it all, but we've had some fairly extreme weather. So is this going to either cause a shortage and then a glut? What will happen?
Good morning, Rochelle. Well, basically, don't panic is the idea here. You'll still get your cherries. There's just been a bit of a delay in the season. So, yeah, as you mentioned, cherries don't like the cold, so it disrupts the ripening process. So we've got some regional Victorian growers who are about 2 or 3 weeks behind their usual schedule, and they're just really hoping for some nice warm weather like we all are.
So where are the majority of our cherries, where do they come from?
So there's a couple of different growing regions around central Victoria and then up in the fruit growing areas near Mildura. So that's sort of the main areas for Victoria. But there's lots of growing regions from around Australia. So there's still supermarkets that are supplying cherries, because even though it's cold in Victoria, it's nice and hot in other places in Australia. So you might not be getting hyper locally grown cherries in the supermarkets, but they're still there at the moment.
So if they're going to be a little late, but they will come, do people only buy them at certain times though, Jane? Like, it's not a common fruit as such, for whatever reason that is. They're not like, say, grapes or apples or oranges. We tend to buy them as an occasion fruit. So if we're not buying them at Christmas, what happens?
Well, Christmas really is the peak time, because not only is it a festive fruit, it's nice and colourful, nice and juicy, but it's also smack in the middle of the correct season for harvest as well. So you sort of do get this glut at one point of the year. And as we know, supply chains are global, so you can get cherries at various times of the year. But the reason that they're popular in Australia around Christmas is because that's when they're at their best. They've just been picked and they're flooding the supermarket shelves, basically.
So supermarkets, I mean, for most people, you would hope that they can buy them direct from farmers, from smaller fruit and veg beverage store holders, a lot of people do buy them from supermarkets. Are they rejecting some of the fruit that maybe is a different colour that's not as big? If we've had more extreme weather, are supermarkets doing the right thing?
Well, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised that the supermarkets have got pretty strict visual and taste specifications that growers have to amount to before they'll sort of pass the test to be on the shelves. But interestingly, there is thousands, if not millions of kilograms that are rejected in Australia by the supermarkets each year because they're not the right shape or the right colour, or they might have the stem missing. That can even be a factor. So there is some organisations like Farmers Pick, which is a food delivery box. They're estimating they're going to divert about 140,000 kilograms away from waste because they've got into contact with farmers, or farmers have gotten in contact with them and said, hey, we don't want to put this in the bin. Where can we put it? Mm. And they're doing sort of specialty boxes of cherries and things like that. So there is solutions to this, but that's obviously not going to fix the entire problem for all growers.
And just finally, Jane, what is the cost per kilo? Because cherries aren't cheap.
They're certainly not cheap. So at Woolworths, $20 per kilo for cherries. Wow. So it's about $6 for 300 grams for a little punnet. So obviously people really enjoy the cherries because they're willing to pay $20 per kilo. So
that's a lot. And just question without notice, can we assume that the cherries that are in supermarkets are local and are grown? Like, we don't, and this is might sound like an absolutely stupid question, but do we import cherries by any chance? Like, is there any chance that we're eating cherries that aren't even from Victoria?
Certainly there's cherries on the shelves that aren't from Victoria. As we mentioned, like if Victoria is a bit colder, other states will have riper cherries at different times.
Maybe from overseas, I guess.
But from overseas, I'd say probably not as much at this time of the year because it's abundant here. But if you are looking for Australian cherries, 9 out of 10 times, if not always, there's an Australian grown or locally grown logo on it because people do want to buy local food.
Yeah, so they've got to know.
But at other times of the year where they're not growing here, you can assume they're going to be imported. So if you're not eating them sort of around that Christmas festive period around December and they're fresh, they are likely to be imported, yeah.
And just don't waste them. Don't leave them out on the table. If you're having Christmas lunch outside, don't leave them out in the sun. These little babies are just too expensive. Jane, good to speak with you. Thank you.
Cheers.
See you. I'm Jane McNaughton, Rural Reporter. In just a moment, Jacinta Parsons will be joining us. Have you heard of the term fridge cigarette? We're going to pull that apart. We're also going to talk about the rise and the rise and the rise and the rise of Robert Irwin. Have you been watching his Dancing with the Stars stream and video on repeat and just looking at it in awe? So we're going to talk about that as well. But if you've just joined us, we were talking about whether or not there is a rise of lockdowns in schools and practicing lockdown drills, and whether or not it's a good thing, or whether or not it, I guess, invokes fear in kids, especially young kids. John in Hawthorne says, my daughter first had a lockdown drill in prep. They closed the doors, closed the blinds. All the kids were told to hide in the corner. My wife and I were a bit concerned, but my daughter was fine. Disturbingly, what she took from it was get into the corner so the bullets are less likely to get her. So that's from John in Hawthorne. This is the thing, right? What goes through your mind, especially when you're young? Now, we've spoken a lot on this program over the years, actually, about the importance of trying to get more women into trade, trying to get more women into construction, in particular when it comes to meeting things like housing targets. But there are heaps of barriers. And one that we haven't touched on, but one that is, I guess, an issue for women, and this was a story that was in The Age today. It highlighted the experience of one woman who was a welder who's actually called out Workwear for just not meeting the needs of women, that all clothes and clothes that are expected, uniforms that are expected to be worn on site, are made and designed for men. Clea Smith is the CEO of Tradeswomen Australia. I hadn't really thought about it, Clea, but when I think about it now, I'm wondering whether or not any kind of construction wear is designed for women.
It's a really interesting conversation. Thanks for having me, Rochelle. Uniforms are symbolic of, you know, a whole bunch of barriers, as you mentioned, that women face to succeeding in trades. But it's a really tangible example because everyone needs to wear a uniform, don't they?
Why are they not, like, what makes them specifically male? Like, why can't a T-shirt is just a T-shirt, right? Or a vest is just a vest?
Yeah, well, consider shape and size, I think, is the simplest one, Rochelle. So a top that has longer sleeves built for a 6-foot male is going to be a safety risk because the sleeves are going to be too long. Or a vest that's built for the male physique is not going to do up. And that's
So they're not built for breasts, basically.
They're not built for breasts. Yeah. They're not built for shorter arms. They're, you know, where the tradies might need their tools, they're down lower. So women are leaning over more often in the day rather than practicalities. This is the way it's been for many moons, and it has worked for decades. But as you indicated, we're facing skill shortages here in Victoria and all over Australia. And if we don't address the barriers like this one, then we're not going to meet those needs.
Man, my brain just goes, why aren't we designing this? There is a market. What are we doing, Claire? Let's
indeed.
There is a market ready to go. I mean, what about safety? Let's talk about, the fact that vests don't do up because women have breasts. On top of that, I could imagine, like, we're only just starting to think about the sort of bras that women wear when they're playing football to keep their breasts safe. Mm. Do we need to think about that in construction?
Yes, I think we do. And I think it's, look, I will say there are more suppliers getting into this market. So I think some of that beaten us to that idea. And so there's a really great improvement in what I'd call the generic tradie workwear. You can go and get a female cut, high vis. It's the skilled trades where they need specific, like the welder you were just speaking of, where that's where the challenges are. And the gear that those women are getting, they essentially need to pay for adjusting them themselves.
So, that's not cheap. If you can't sew, like me, then going to a tailor, I mean, they're hard to find these days at the best of times.
Yep. Yeah, and again, it's one of those uniforms for us. They're a belonging. They're a part of identity. And if you're not given a uniform that fits, you don't feel part of the team. You went to sport. You don't feel valued. And it's those messages that women are getting in the trade sector that is making, they're actually leaving faster than they're coming in, Rochelle. So what's exciting is more women are entering. So I think the awareness and the opportunity message is getting out there, which is wonderful. But until we address these sorts of workplace inclusion is really the high-level conversation we're having here, is the things that your workers need to do a good job.
Rochelle, this is so true. I try and buy good steel capped boots for work and I can never find any small enough to fit me properly.
That's it.
Oh, gosh. All right. Hopefully someone's listening to this and just has a light bulb moment, right? And makes $1 million and you and I can just, 10% fee for coming up with it, Claire?
Yeah, I'm on it.
What do you think?
it sounds like a good idea. And, in terms of what we can do, I mean, thank you for having this conversation. It's a really good starting point to addressing all the sort of systemic barriers. Women in the workplace, men in the workplace that can see this happening with their colleagues, speak up.
Yeah.
Because employers, there's different levels. There's the individual level. Employers don't know what they don't know. So to the employees, I would say, tell them. To the employers, I would say, just consider your workplace from a gender lens, is the language we use, Rochelle, which is your employers are going to need women to fill the skill shortages to make the successful businesses. Take the time now to get the backyard in order, because the cost of people of retention, or the lack of retention, is going to be much higher than the cost of securing good workwear, to use the example.
Absolutely. There's a few labels that are being mentioned, and of course, being the ABC, we can't really do that. But I reckon if you threw into Google, women's workwear and construction wear, you might find a good little local product or two. Claire, thank you.
Not a problem. Thanks for the conversation, Rochelle.
Claire Smith is the CEO of Tradeswomen Australia.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
My favourite time of the week, Ms. Jacinta Parsons. Happy Friday to you, my friend.
We missed each other last week and there is something inside me. It's like a little, it's not a bomb, but like, you know, something clicks in and I'm like, where's my Rochelle hit for the week?
So before we talk about something that we possibly shouldn't be talking about, it's very tricky to talk about, which is the rise and the rise and the rise of Robert Irwin and why we're now all obsessed with him and how do we talk about it and talk about him without sounding like we're a bit icky and, you know,
I am not objectifying him. I'm concerned about your objectification. I see him as an artist, babe.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk
about
that.
But what I'm concerned about is, like, I never saw that coming.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Anyway,
okay, what have you got for me to start?
So, have you heard of a fridge cigarette?
I saw a text here from Patrick in Ferntree Gully that says, are fridge cigarettes having a ciggy at the fridge while looking for a beer because I've had a few of those over my time?
Patrick, no, but you're close. Can I play you the sound of a fridge cigarette?
God, this feels uncomfortable, but yes, go for it. Do you know, I feel like we're with Bruce and Phil on Overnights and where you had to pick the sound. Imagine? Oh, remember Bruce and Phil?
We would go. Don't even
Anyway, let's not go sideways there.
So TikToker Rachel Renault, I think her name is. So she was at work and she overheard someone calling a Diet Coke a fridge cigarette. And from that moment, she went, oh, that's all it will ever be now in my mind. I can never unhear that. It has never been more true. That moment of when you have a really cold, like, let me take you there, right?
Okay.
A really cold.
What are you wearing?
Excuse me.
No, I don't mean it in a
weekend
rude way.
Weekend wear.
What is that for you? Do you ever wear Lycra?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Tracksuit?
You've never worn anything but a top.
I'm not going to wear Lycra to work. But what am I?
For all the people wearing Lycra to work today, we apologise.
Birkenstocks, tracksuit pants.
Birkenstocks.
T-shirt.
I respect you a little less than I did.
Shame. Anyway, come on, picture. I don't picture that. Anyway, then there is a really, really cold can of diet soda. Let's go Diet Coke. The outside of it is so cold that it's dewy and wet and it's so cold that it burns your fingers, right? And you're on your own. There's no one else around you. You've had a really tough day. You just want some time out and you just and you take that first sip and the sweet taste of chemicals. And you are, for that moment, no one's annoying you. You're having some time out.
Wow.
It's like back in the 90s when I actually used to smoke.
Wow.
Fridge cigarette.
This is what they call in the business. What is it? ARM, ACR? Well,
ASMR.
Something, which just means sounds are evocative.
Yeah.
You doing that smoking thing is triggering everyone right now. I've not heard of that. And I mean, people will go to fridge for cold cans of other things, but this is specifically about the soda variety. Is that right?
Yes. Innocence. Yeah. Well, and just that time out, it's a little bit wrong. It's a bit of a vice.
So you're being naughty a little bit.
A little bit
naughty.
I love
how naughty you are. That's so cute of you.
And it's that time out. It's that moment of,
I know,
I'm just going to ka-ch.
Because this thing happened, right? When you were at work through the 90s, every 10 minutes you were downstairs with your mates having a cigarette.
Oh,
no, a real one.
Well, this is the thing,
back,
right?
In the day. Or you were at the bank and you would smoke at the teller.
So,
remember
just
that?
Anywhere.
Just everywhere.
Your desk. Can you remember that? I remember a mate of mine in the 90s when everyone did smoke and he didn't smoke and people would go out for smokos and he'd be like, hang on.
Where's mine?
Well, you're doing less work than me. And he said, what if I'm addicted to, I think it was
almonds.
No, it was like Lifesavers or Fruit Loops or something. He said, what if I, Tic Tacs, right? What if I have a Tic Tac addiction? Why can't I go out for my Tic Tacs every 20 minutes and doing less work.
And look, I think there's something to that because we have been encouraged to chill out a bit. Like, we work too much. We eat our food at our desk. Stop it. Have a tic-tac break. Go to your fridge. Have some time out. Yeah?
What's the state of your keyboard? Like, how much?
Oh, okay. Do you want me to tell you something about you that I've been holding inside?
It's disgusting.
You shocked me. When I filled in for you on Conversation Hour.
Oh, it's gross.
I spoke to your beautiful producer, Amber Tripp, and I looked in her eyes and I said, who is she? I don't understand this. It's almost like you put stuff inside your keyboard, like you actually went of your way to put things into it. I had to clean it. And I, for just moments of thinking about you, I had to shake it. I had to disinfect it.
It's disgusting.
You had things that you had left there, like a spoon with food on it. That's my scene. You're jumping on my bandwagon.
Who I am at work is not at home. I am like this neat freak. At work, it's like I'm camping, you know?
I think worse than there was no toilets in this camping site that you were on.
I'm disgusting.
Wow.
I forgot to clean it. I'm so sorry.
I haven't brought it up
meal
with you.
Out of my keyboard.
I did, and it was lovely. Like, you know, I had all sorts of rice. I had some noodles. I had corn. It was incredible. But yeah, so the office situation I think is something.
Let's have a chat to Rob, who's in Frankston. Rob, do you take, first of all, how dirty is your keyboard, Rob?
My keyboard's pretty good. I've got a laptop and it stays closed most of the time.
Oh, good. That's impressive on every level. Well done. Don't open the laptop.
Fridge cigarettes?
Fridge cigarettes, they're a thing, I tell you. Like, for me, I drink cola from the red can. Not the black one. You got it in one. Like, that crack of the can, and you take that first mouthful, hits the back of your throat, and it's just like, yeah, that's the one.
It kind of, because of the burning as well, you know, there's something delightful about the pain in your mouth, and you feel satisfied.
Yeah.
Smoke in the olden days, Rob?
I did until recently, yeah. I gave up probably 3 months ago.
Oh, good on you.
Thank you. And yeah, it's very much similar. It's all about that when it hits the back of your throat. And it's the first mouthful, you know, and after that, it's sort of.
Then it just, the hit's not the same, right? Like any drug. No. This is the thing, Rob. If the fridge cigarette isn't cold, the drug doesn't work.
Absolutely, no, it's not worth it. It's got to be super cold. Like you said, it's got to have the dew on the outside as soon as it comes out of that fridge and it's burning your hand. It's like, yeah, this is the one.
Yeah, Rob. Yeah, it's got to be almost painful.
Can I ask the two of you how professional your fridges are? Nothing comes out dewy out of my fridge.
On a hot day?
Yeah,
when you get home, it's on a hot day, it comes down. If it's cold enough, it dews up pretty quick.
Wow.
Do you have a beer fridge, Rob?
No, I don't drink much beer.
Okay. I'm always impressed when someone has, like, just a drinks fridge that's just dedicated to drinks. And, I mean, now they're a bit posh and fancy, but, you know, growing up me,
there was one in the shed. There still is one in my shed.
They were disgusting. They were so dirty.
Because they'd also have fish guts in there as well. That's my shed fridge anyway. This is interesting from Lara. We're talking about smoking as a sidebar. Mm. Lara says, in the 90s, I worked as a medical secretary and I would be smoking on one side of the desk and the patients would be smoking on the other side of the desk in reception. It was very cloudy environment. When we then stopped smoking, though, in pubs as well, we then realised how bad pubs smelt with urine. There were moments like, wow, we should have just kept that smell instead of the one that's now there.
1-300-222-774. You can text as well, 0437-774-774. The fridge cigarette. I don't like cold, cool cans. But I like them not too icy. No, they've got to be icy or it doesn't work. Okay. Let's talk about something that's really tricky to talk about that maybe.
Only for you. I'm separating myself as a woman from you right now. Go for it.
So, let me start with this.
Okay.
Dancing Freestyle. With his partner Whitney Carson, it's Robert Irwin.
So, if you haven't seen it, you've got to.
How many times have you watched this particular dance of Robert Irwin on the American Dancing with the Stars? I am transfixed by him.
I don't know what's happened to me. I am equally, I've gone down the Irwin rabbit hole and will never get out.
No.
Because also, because I've gone down so hard, all I get as content on my Instagram now is the Irwin family. And they asked me the other day, Instagram, are you happy with this content? And I went, yeah, baby, more.
So I've got a theory.
Tell me.
So at a time, Robert Irwin, I mean, we are loving him here now because basically someone else loves him, which is America. And he's gone viral all around the world and is about to catapult into the next level. For me, I look at Robert Irwin, I look at this dance. First things first, the man can dance.
Oh, ah, oh. It's amazing.
The little back flips.
The little legs, the little hold your body and point your toes.
And the passion in his eyes.
This is it. This is it. So I don't know where you were going, but where
I'm
going to
go somewhere else on the tick.
Do you want me to go here?
No, go.
I just happened upon him. So this is the American Dancing with the Stars with, what's her name? Whitney, who's been doing the dancing for 10 years. Anyway,
she's amazing.
So I stumbled upon it and I was like, I don't understand this man because for such a long time, Robert Bobby Irwin has been just like the kid who likes crocodiles, is overexcited.
Over the top.
Quite lovely. And then all of a sudden, there's masculinity in that body that I feel confused by.
Here's my theory, right? You've got everything you just described. Someone who can be joyful, daggy, innocent, sexy and masculine all at the same time, right? At a time, and maybe why we're all obsessing about him, is because at a time when we are so worried about young men and what it means to be a man.
Beautiful.
Is he, I'm going to say this, the perfect man?
That is.
Boom.
Well, this one I can't read to you. I wish I could. I will. Should I read this? Because this is part of our problem now.
Just the text that says, and farts?
No, not and farts. What is and farts anyway? Someone said, and he's only 21. So this is really important to remember. Mm. But there's someone in Geelong who said, I love Robert Irwin, the dancer, even more than I did when I saw him in the Bonds ad campaign. Because we did this. Objectifying men is as... Anyway, but this next sentence, I just have to read it. I'm 66 and I swear I ovulated. Sorry, not sorry. And I don't condone that message as such, but it was just like the fact that you ovulated.
But this is different. So the Bonds ad, everyone went, oh, hey, hang on a second. Bobby Irwin got sexy. This, for whatever reason,
yes,
there's sexiness, but there's something else. There's how can he be everything in one? And he goes from the sexy dance to the kind of playful, joyful dance. I can't figure out what it is.
I love
He's
that you are
so
talking
great.
About positive, that positive masculine
yes.
image that we don't see enough, where there is an unashamed vulnerability. He's talked a lot about the loss of his father throughout this season, Steve Irwin. He did a dance for his father. He danced with his sister on this season as well. He danced with his mum. And his partner, very American, Whitney, who now I'm also upset. Like, what's happened to me? She said, I think America has gone so gaga because what they really, really needed was a Robert Irwin to bring joy.
Yes.
And to do that, though, and be highly talented as well. Conundrum
I love
is the
Irwin
word.
Family. My family and our best mate's family, we all went on a holiday together, which was just beautiful and gorgeous. And we went to the Irwin family farm thing, world, whatever it's called, Australia World, Australia Zoo. Anyhow.
I love that you went to Australia Zoo.
It's awesome.
No, it's love. I imagine you in your high heels at Australia Zoo.
I have casual attire. Thank you very much. I do resort wear, holiday wear. I dress on theme.
Do you wear a muumuu ever?
Yeah, by the pool, man.
You muumuu it.
Well, I like to call it a kaftan, but...
You kaftan.
I've got multiple kaftans depending on the mood that I'm in. You have no idea.
I have no idea anyhow. About you.
So I was secretly hoping that I would see an actual Irwin at
Australia Zoo. I was so excited. And for me and my best mate, and we were sitting there, we got really, and you're watching the big show, and they put up pictures of Steve, and he, yeah, and the pictures with his family. And my girlfriend and I got teary.
Yeah.
Our kids are looking at us like, what is wrong with you? And we're like, you have no idea what this family is so beautiful.
It's fascinating. This is why we need to do our next PhD, because I've already done one, on the Irwin family, because I just think someone has also mentioned that Bindi also won when she was 17 and was an incredible dancer. Bobby is an incredible dancer. They come from Steve Irwin. Everything about it doesn't really make sense, you know, and they've been so successful in America.
Mm.
All of these bits where there is what was seemingly, a really polished media family because they were so good at selling. But I think what we've found is this genuine stuff. And what we've explored with Robert Irwin throughout this whole thing, as I said before, is the complex nature of grief, his experience of taking on legacy, the ideas around what his father meant and how important it is. Like, it's interesting to watch a young man embody a life that was not finished for the purpose of honouring that life of Steve.
And you can do it and be joyful and happy. And gosh, you've just taken me back to when the news broke when Steve Irwin died. Can you remember? I was the traffic reporter here, making it up, by the way. If I ever gave you a traffic report,
this is like, this will get my walkley. Can I ask you hard hitting questions? That's horrific.
Well, I didn't have time. I was also producing.
So what would you say?
Oh, sometimes I just repeat. Oh, I don't know. The Monash is bumper to bumper. It's, you know, the colder, inbound, outbound.
For everyone who was listening to that in the day.
I didn't have time.
This is shocking.
Oh, I was generalised. If there was important information, I'd give it to you. Anyhow, I went home early because it started early and the news broke and I was on my own and I sat there and wept for hours when he died.
Yes. It is strange. I just have to say that. People are saying that we're gushing over this 21-year-old.
No.
Not at all. It's actually acknowledging. Yeah, do it.
The winners and new champions of Dancing with the Stars are Robert and Whitney!
Robert, what does this moment mean to you right now?
My sister said it best. Thank you for changing my life.
Oh, so straight away mentions his sister. She's a legend too.
All of it. This is why I think I'm so obsessed by it. And really, this is not about Robert Irwin, but I am really interested in this very kind of complex human that I guess I wrote off as being fairly,
I think we all did. This is the thing.
Monodimensional way.
He's a doofus.
And why do we even have opinions about this stuff? But it is interesting to see what a public person might do for some of that, as you were mentioning before, the role of actually being authentic in themselves and encouraging others, especially young men, to be the same.
Anthony's in Mount Martha. Morning, Anthony.
Oh, I'm going to cop it for this a bit. This is my second time on this morning. I get that Robert Irwin's an amazing role model for young men, and young men are a little bit lost at the moment. There's no doubt about it. But I couldn't imagine, if we were talking about a female star, I couldn't imagine even putting on air a text message that says to the words, when that lady said she's 68 and she's ovulating over Robert Irwin, I just couldn't imagine
being able to say that.
I couldn't imagine. Really good point.
And this
because we had this conversation earlier in the year, and exactly that. What is the double standards when it comes to this? And so I'm guilty of reading that. Because, interesting.
Well, because when Robert Irwin did the whole Bonds commercial, the internet broke there as well and people were objectifying him in a way where and you are so right, Anthony, if it was reversed, there is no way we would allow it. I was hoping today that it was actually, and what I was trying to get to, and maybe we haven't articulated it properly, is that it's actually something else. There's something else. about him and his personality and how he embraces just being true to himself as well. He has never changed. He's still funny and daggy, but he can be muscly and he can love dancing and he can do all of this stuff. I don't know what it is. And I actually think that as Australians in general, locally here, we've kind of laughed at him for a long time.
Not I guess that's him. What we're dancing around a little bit, aren't we? That there was sort of cultural cringe for
100%.
That, for that exaggerated Australian identity.
We cringed on the Irwins. And now America love him. We're like, oh, yeah, but we do too.
Yeah. And just to really be clear here, this is not objectifying him. It's looking at his capacity as a dancer,
yeah,
using his body in a way that is just really professional.
He's a good dancer. He could actually just be a dancer.
And seeing him do that has just been confusing because of that.
Do you reckon he has always wanted to be a dancer?
Well, this is it.
I wonder.
Imagine if you find out later in life you could have been Hugh Jackman. Like, he could have been.
He couldn't still be. I mean, yeah, he could still be. And maybe there's a way to dance at Australia Zoo. There's a big stage there. There's a big arena, you know.
I love that you were there and you know all about the Australia Zoo.
It's really impressive. Oh, and that was the other thing that was impressive about the family, because this felt like a legacy and it wasn't about them. And the other thing about Australia Zoo is that it wasn't actually about you as the visitor. It was about the animals. And there were times where they say, go away, you've got to stay back because we're taking this big fat wombat for a walk. The food, you could get healthy, yummy food. It was...
And just the
such a, as they would say on the castle, it was an absolute credit to the airline.
He has used this platform for conservation, like deeply, seriously, authentically, not just as I should use my platform. This is, you know, central to the work that he has done, as we said before, and that legacy that he's carrying on from his father. Oh, look, I feel sad that people think we were objectifying.
You know, we tried not to. And it's more about just watching him. If you haven't seen the video, watch the video and you'll know what we're talking about. It's infectious, actually. It's incredible to watch. And I feel very happy for him. I find it just joyful to see someone enjoying that so much and to do it so well. Jacinta Parsons, love you. Have a wonderful show. On Monday, we have a special program. We are going to be live from the brand new Town Hall Station. You can come down and join us. We're going to be moving around, but we're going to have lots of different people, including the architect. We've got a train driver. We've got people that know more about traffic than apparently I do, because I just admitted that I made stuff up. However, we are going to be live and you can join us from Town Hall Station on Monday. Have a wonderful and safe weekend.